paper 29, section 2. We got into the section a little bit. We're on old single column, page 321, countdown. And you know, in that section 2 about the Supreme Power Centers, there's 7 different ones. You see that we got through type number 1 there, the Supreme Center Supervisors. We're ready to start type number 2, the Havona Centers. Okay, and just to get us spun back up a little bit here, drop back and just look at that first sentence of section 1. Just on the previous page, if you're in the single column there. Let me just read that first sentence again and remind you, we're all, you know, get us back into the hierarchy here. The 7 Supreme Power Directors are the physical energy regulators of the grand universe. I guess actually 2 sentences. Their creation by the 7 Master Spirits is the first recorded instance of the derivation of semi-material progeny from true spirit ancestry. And as you remember, that whole paragraph, we spent a lot of time just trying to unpack that one paragraph. There's one thing that we didn't emphasize in there that I thought I should emphasize here and kind of get you back in the spirit of things. So we're thinking about this whole hierarchy of beings who are quote-unquote semi-material. And you might have a thought, in technical terms, despite all their comments in here about collectively and individually and spirit and semi-material and all that about the master spirits, how technically can anything even semi-material come from quote-unquote master spirits? Spiritual beings, sort of. They try to remind you that with a simple word injected in passing. They're semi-material progeny, not of pure spirit ancestry, but true spirit ancestry. True. In other words, conformal with the cosmos, the harmony. We've mentioned this off and on that, for simplicity, because the being is, if you think in that linear terms of the semi, half of the line is kind of spiritual and the other half is kind of material, like when they use that. If you think in that simple linear terms about where the beings are, a lot of times we're talking about beings that are far enough away from our material endpoint of that line that you can just call them spiritual beings. But technically, they're not pure spiritual beings. The only pure spiritual beings, and they, I don't even know if they should use the word being or personality or anything to describe them, are those ones that are on the Eternal Sun's worlds. Okay, the Eternal Sun is pure spirit, so it gives rise to beings that are going to be pure spirit beings, or purely spirit beings. Not to be confused with using pure spirit for talking about like father fragments. So all beings, like, even master spirits, even how far they are from us, in any sort of material sense, all these beings are some sort of an absonite blend, a harmony of material and spiritual energy. In Marantia substance, we think of it very simplistically, of literally weaving the two together in a warp and a woof, so that you have this heterogeneous substance. If you imagined melting that together, or stirring it all up, homogenizing it, making it a homogeneous substance with a particular ratio of material and spiritual energy before you stirred it up, you'd get various homogeneous blends of material and spiritual energy, which technically is an absonite, substance expression, related to those other 18 Triodides of the 20. Okay. So they're reminding you that a master spirit isn't a magical being. I mean, if he was purely spiritual and he made even a semi-material, that would be magic. Can't do that. If anything, even semi-material comes out of them, there must be material energy in them. You know, that in their collective mode of functioning, you know, has achieved recessive expression. Yeah. See, that's why they said true, to remind you that you have, you know, this blend, this harmony of material and spiritual energy, and you're, you know, and in terms of how you will engage them, you know, feel them on the outside, they'll feel spiritual. You know, because they don't put a material face forward. They have some material nature, but they don't put that forward. They put the more of a spiritual face forward. But inside, you know, if you will, there's material potential that gets expressed here. So note the little, you know, every word is very precisely chosen, you know, to their true spirit ancestry. And that fact has been just, you know, made manifest. That they're not pure spiritual beings, that they gave rise to semi-material. And so then the whole hierarchy descends down from them. It's all semi-material. And like we... okay, so now kind of getting back into the power centers. You know, in that type number one of these next notch down in this hierarchy of semi-material beings, we had these supreme center supervisors. And they pointed out that very important fact that those seven Supreme Center supervisors have a liaison relationship with the seven Supreme Power Directors. So you have the seven Supreme Power Directors normally on peripheral paradise, and then the seven Center supervisors on the worlds of the Infinite Spirit. So like in our case, the seventh world, which is called Orvinton, which our super universe is named after. You know, so one of those Supreme Center supervisors is on that world, Orvinton, the seventh of the Infinite Spirit's world. And they're one-to-one in liaison. So you have seven pairs, liaison pairs with this Supreme Power Directors. So they together, they become... pointed out there, that those 14 beings, you know, in that liaison thing, are to universe power what the seven supreme executives are to general universe affairs, and what the seven master spirits are to the cosmic mind. That is, they are, and do you remember that when you hyphen the two words together, which one is it? Is it center source or source center? Anyone remember?
Sure. Source.
Is it? No, it's source center.
Yeah.
Source center, right? And they teed that up at the beginning of that paragraph. You know, so write that paragraph right before we're going to start reading. When they said the Supreme Power Directors and the Supreme Center Supervisors, you know, instead of having all those words separated by an and, distill them down to one word. The first one is source and center. Together in liaison, they're a source and center phenomenon, a source center. Okay. So you have, you know, and remember what it's a source center of, not of energy, but the purposing of energy. You know, they are to universe power, you know, it said there. Okay? That, you know, power is purposed energy. Okay? You know, they're directors. Okay? They're purpose. So you, the source of that purposing, of that direction, see, comes down from on high, and it is centered in this hierarchy of centers that we're going to descend down through. So in this source and center, it's a very interesting construct. You know, instead of having it all, you know, thinking of it all together as one being, first on an equal level, you separate source and center into two two beings, and actually two sets of beings. And then on top of that, you draw down a hierarchy of centers from the center end of that, source and center, origin. And so we're going to descend down through those centers now. So that's the picture that we've got. And remember, the power directors and all these centers are very definitive personal beings. They are third source personalities, but they're definitively personal. So no matter how much they sound like a machine, you know, keep in the back of your mind that they're definitively personal. They're purposing energy. They're imposing pattern. They're copying the aisle's pattern into energy, making it power. You know, that energy pattern, as opposed to spirit pattern, personality, that energy pattern of the Isle of Paradise, that pattern is copied. You may remember if you go back and read about it up in the foreword. So they're the ones that are doing that copying, that are imposing pattern, energy pattern upon energy, and making it power. Okay, and that's you know, that takes a person to be directing that. Okay, I think that'll be enough. Anything else we'll pick up in context here. So let's do the Havona centers.
Two Havona centers. Before the creation of the universes of time and space, power centers were not required in Havona. But ever since these far distant times, 1 million have functioned in the central creation, each center having the supervision of 1,000 Havona worlds. Here in the divine universe, there is perfection of energy control, a condition not existing elsewhere. Perfection of energy regulation is the ultimate goal of all the power centers and the physical controllers of space.
Okay, so the two things to appreciate there. Let's start with the most important or immediate purposes. The central universe is the pattern universe. And so they're reminding you that of that here. That in terms of dealing with energy in the context of finite creation, you know, as we understand it, you know, super universe and like creation, which has its consequences in outer space levels and also its consequences in the central universe. But, you know, that basic evolving energy phenomenon, that what is it evolving towards? It's evolving to become patterned like it is patterned from the get-go in the central universe. The get-go of the seven super universes, that is. So as soon as you need a pattern for the super universe level to be striving for, coincidentally, a pattern it manifests in the pattern universe. The energy that's immediately reciprocally related to the energy out here is taken a hold of and purposed perfectly. Out here, it's being purposed perfectingly. In there, it was purposed perfectly. So it was just done right away. So they're reminding you that ultimate goal. So in a sense, see, you've downstepped pattern. You have just the pattern, the absolute of pattern, of the Isle of Paradise, and that gets downstepped into Havona, and then that serves then as the immediate pattern for the super universes, the purposing of energy there, as opposed to, you know, all the time necessarily hearkening all the way back to the aisle. You know, you've gotten halfway there with that pattern by downstepping it into the central universe, and then you're going to downstep that out here in this temporal perfecting process. Okay, so that. The issue of why are there a million has to do with the complexities of unpacking the pattern universe, the patterns in the pattern universe. When you do that, you can understand immediately why there's a million, Okay, so I, you know, that involves, but that involves a lot of precursors. You know, like I said so many times here, you know, I can't go into that here. But just to know that that is immediately understandable once you unpack the patterns in the central universe, you know why there's a million there. You know, and why they work with 1,000. So both of those things, you know, why there's a million and why they work with 1,000. But the key is just that, you know, okay, so now we have the these beings that can, you know, they don't have to do anything in this temporal fashion. They can just, okay, it's purposed perfectly, and then they just hold it there for all those their fellows that are working out in the super universes to constantly look back to as a touchstone. Okay, I gotta make it like that. You know, they just keep working off that pattern. They're trying to, you know, and they're working in a dynamic system. You're like, okay, I think I got it. You know, and then something messes it up, and they got to start all over again. Okay, you know, because it's a very complicated system. But they're slowly trying to work it towards, you know, that. I mean, if they didn't have to deal with the evolving supreme, you know, they could just grab a hold of the seven super universes and lock them into a downsteps expression of the whole Vona pattern. But they can, you know, do it by fiat. All right, so they're kind of the, you know. They're there to be pattern, and then now let's actually get into really the hierarchy of centers that we're looking to understand here.
Three, super universe centers. Occupying an enormous area on the capital sphere of each of the seven super universes are 1,000 power centers of the third order. Three currents of primary energy of 10 segregations each come into these power centers. But seven specialized and well-directed, though imperfectly controlled, circuits of power go forth from their seat of united action. This is the electronic organization of universe power.
Okay, a couple things I want to bring out there. You know, if we didn't want to speak factually and say imperfectly controlled, if we want to speak truthfully, we would say perfectingly controlled. Let's deal with the kind of a little bit of an aside here first. This issue of, okay, they tell you there's 1,000 of them on each super universe capital. Why? Why is because there are 1,000 minor sectors in a super universe. So there's one super universe center for each minor sector. He's tailoring what he's doing and directing what he's doing towards a particular minor sector. You know, each one of them has a minor sector that they're dealing with. So there's 1,000 minor sectors, so that's why there's 1,000 of them. Okay, and you may remember that we actually, in passing, referred to this. This fact that we're you know, here we are in the super universe capital, we're immediately looking to the local to the minor sectors, for in this power picture. It's back on single column page 211. Is this paper 18? I think it is, isn't it? Yeah, paper 18, section 5. The third paragraph. I want to read the third paragraph and just remind you what we mentioned in passing as we did this a while back. So they're right at the bottom of single column 211. The governments of the minor sectors are very largely, though not exclusively, concerned with the great physical problems of the super universes. The minor sector spheres are the headquarters of the master physical controllers. Okay, so here you see. So we're immediately, you know, thinking of linking from the super universe capital to the headquarters worlds of the master physical controllers, the minor sectors. On these worlds, ascending mortals carry on studies and experiments having to do with the examination of the activities of the third order of the supreme power centers and of all seven orders of the master physical controllers. Okay, that's who we're reading about, the third order of the supreme power centers. See, so there you are on the minor sector. You're working, you're ascending up. You've gotten out of the local universe. on the first superuniverse level, at the minor sector level, and immediately, are you looking, you know, this, when you're studying power, are you looking at something, you know, right next to you? No, your attention is immediately set on Universa, in our case, you know, to this third order, these superuniverse centers, because they are, you know, what you immediately see as the center of this energy phenomenon that you're studying. They're anchoring it, you know, for the whole superuniverse. You know, and you start with probably, you know, appreciating that one center that's directly related to the minor sector you're in, and then appreciating how it's all the minor sectors are being worked with in a relatively uniform way. But, you know, it's obviously not totally uniform, or there would be just one center on Universa. There's a thousand. I mean, you're beginning to tailor things to a particular minor sector. Okay, that's why there's a thousand. And even if it isn't highly tailored, you know, in the sense of oxygen is different in each of the minor sectors, or something like that, which it isn't, you've got a very complex system that you're managing here, as they're reminding you here. So back to paper 29, as they're reminding you of in that paragraph as well. You have 10 different forms of material energy. And you have three phases of each of those 10. So 30 altogether phases. Seven of those 10 forms are called dead energies. And three are called living energies. The seven, you know, go in to make dead things like the armrest on this couch, you know, or, you know, the material things. The other three of the 10, living energies, obviously you're going to have something to do with living things. And you know how much tailoring there is of living things. So, you know, there's going to be some tailoring of even the seven, you know, because, you know, not every minor sector is the same. You know, evolution is, you know, not happening, you know, uniformly. So you can't have the center on Universa beaming a bunch of energy to this minor sector, and there's only one local universe there. You know, it's got to be tailored to how many local universes and all those details. So there is some tailoring, even if you're not modifying the precise nature of oxygen molecules. But you may very well be doing things in a more tailored sense related to life and its specificity. Okay.
On the living piece of it, does it have anything to do with plasma?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with anything that any human has the slightest notion of. You know, those, you know, and the one of the three is the literal energy of mechanical mind. Okay, so, you know, remember, with mind, you have two aspects of what's going on with mind. You have the literal energy, and then you have the, you know, so there's that mind energy, and then you have mind activity. Also, there's these two aspects to mind, mind energy and mind activity. The literal energy aspect, okay, is related, is one of those three. Okay. So, you know, mechanical mind is just for engaging living things. It's one of the living energies, okay? So this whole bit about... you know, but seven specialized and well-directed. See, they're specialized, okay? But imperfectly controlled. Okay, so that's why you have the thousand, because you have a thousand. You have a thousand minor sectors. And we'll get more into the details of the energy in the next paragraph here.
All energy is circuited in the paradise cycle, but the universe power directors direct the force energies of nether paradise as they find them modified in the space functions of the central and super universes, converting and directing these energies into channels of useful and constructive application. There is a difference between Havona energy and the energies of the super universes. The power charge of a super universe consists of three phases of energy of 10 segregations each. This threefold energy charge spreads throughout the space of the grand universe. It is like a vast moving ocean of energy, which engulfs and bathes the whole of each of the seven super creations.
Okay. So, two things in there again, more about the nature, but notice up front, they're just saying what we've been pointing out. You know, they italicize direct, you know, that the universe power directors direct, you know, and then they go on to say things like, you know, into channels of useful and constructive application. They purpose energy. And that's a simple way we've been summing up what they're saying there. Now, that's what power is, purposed energy, just like they're describing. They're taking the raw energy, which, you know, they aren't the source of, but just taking it as they find it and purposing it, imposing pattern upon it. When you purpose the, you know, a certain kind of energy and it becomes what you call an oxygen atom, is it useful? Yeah, very useful. I'm using it right now to respirate. It's purposed energy, purposed for respiration, purposed for, you know, all these various things. It's purposed. The universe was created to be inhabited. There's nothing random about oxygen being what oxygen is. It's made that way solely to be, you know, for respiration and the other things it is used for. I mean, it's purposed to that. Nothing arbitrary or random about it. And these beings see to it. You know, the universe is personality managed. So everything that you need is found to be there in the evolutionary process. Right, nothing happened by accident.
No, it's all just a happy accident.
We're not going to go into a lot of the physics. You notice they just mentioned, reminded you that the energy in Havona is fundamentally different in many ways from the energy out here. You know, and they sort of just mentioned that, and immediately, but let's talk about the super universes, basically, they're saying. And there's two different ways that they talk about this 30, you know, you can either say it that you have three phases, you know, with 10 segmentations or whatever, or forms, or you'll see it the other way around. They'll say there's 10 phases, or maybe if they're just talking about the seven phases, you know, with three different, you know, variations. They'll say it either way. You know, either making it, you know, 10 phases or three phases, and then the rest of the story. Why? Why do they say it in the two different ways? It's the difference between bottom-up and top-down perspective. You notice here, they're very purposely saying three phases, 10 segmentations. That's because why are there three here? There's three because there's three dimensions of absonite. All of this energy that is being purposed here has its foundations and fundamental nature rooted as an absonite phenomenon. We're just engaging the finite projection of that deeper, or if you want to think of it, higher absonite, you know, foundation or root of the energy phenomenon. So fundamentally, you have three dimensions in the absonite, and that's why there's three dimensions in the finite, because the finite is a downstep projection of the absonite. So there ends up being three dimensions in the finite. But now you have six dimensions there, but don't think of it as, you know, you have the three dimensions we know and then three more like it. No, these are three transcendent dimensions. So it's not like you have a six-dimensional universe in some simple-minded, you know, modern physics way. Okay, you have three finite and then three transcendent absonite dimensions. And the importance is one absonite dimension, when you project it down into the finite, it doesn't project to just one of the three finites. It projects to all three finites Each absonite projects to all three finites because it's this transcendent thing. You know, it transcends the independence of X, Y, and Z in the finite. So it's not, you know, subservient to that. It's, you know, it transcends. So it touches all three of our finite dimensions equally because it's an absent. So that's why. So, you know, fundamentally, you have this threefoldness in the absonite, but since each of those projects down completely here, you have three different separate phases. You know, it isn't that you have the energy that's in the X axis and the RY axis and Z axis. All three of those phases are all in X, Y, and Z. Okay, because they're so. So when they say three phases, they're wanting you to get top down and look down and think of this projecting down into the finite, you know, from a transcendent domain. So when it engages the finite, it's going to be ubiquitous, which engulfs and bathes the whole of each of the seven super creations. See, that because they want to say that, that's why they said three phases instead of 10 phases, why they said it top down. Because they want you to recognize that's what you're starting with, is this this ubiquitous energy environment in each super universe. And these centers on the super universe headquarters are pulling what they're doing out of that environment. It's not like you have a beam coming from the central universe or something towards Uversa. That's not possible. That's illogical. Because for there to be a beam like that, you'd have to have the central universe be a finite thing. It's not. It's transcendent. It's basically an absonite domain. So, you know, if you try to send a beam out, it becomes an ocean and not a beam. It becomes a ubiquitous presence once it, you know, comes down into the finite. Okay? So that's what that's why they're saying it that way. But once it's down in here, you know, and especially once these centers grab a hold of it and then send it back, you know, send it out, okay, now you can kind of drop down into the bottom-up point of view. And usually, when you're talking about these things, you talk about 10 or 7. Oh, yeah, and then there's three phases. You know, but you're focused more on the 10 or 7 first, not the 3 first. Okay. All right. Let's get a little bit more here.
The electronic organization of universe power functions in seven phases and discloses varying response to local or linear gravity. This sevenfold circuit proceeds from the superuniverse power centers and pervades each supercreation. Such specialized currents of time and space are definite and localized energy movements initiated and directed for specific purposes. Much as the Gulf Stream functions as a circumscribed phenomenon in the midst of the Atlantic Ocean.
So you see how they're playing with the analogy, because so it's not like these centers on the superuniverse headquarters suck it all up out of the superuniverse and then spit it back out again. The bath that's ubiquitous in the superuniverse remains. They pull in, you know, and send back out the seven in definitive channels, you know, like directed right at a minor sector. Okay, and it's just the seven, not all 10, they're doing that with. You see, we already see switched gears, and we're talking, and we're kind of, the three is always just there, you know, in between the lines. They're bathed in all 10, but they're only what they're wanting to do is, most definitively, is do something with the seven. And so you still have the bath of the seven, you still have the Atlantic Ocean, but they're going to make a Gulf Stream of those seven in the midst of that ocean of the seven. Okay, so, you know, it even sounds a lot like it's a directed phenomenon, see? You know, that you have this channel-like phenomenon. Okay, so that's the picture that they want you to recognize, because you, when you're first thinking about this, oh, it's like a network, you know, it's a grid, and you think very linearly and simplistically. You got to remember, you've got the absolute and the finite together here. So, you know, once you get it down into the finite more, okay, then you can kind of think more simplistically, linearly, you know, that I've got a node and I've got lines, you know, connecting to other nodes and that sort of a thing. But it's coming in transcendently. So it starts with this ubiquity. All right. So then you notice, we skip over the major and minor sectors and jump to the local universe. So let's see what's up with that.
Four local universe centers. On the headquarters of each local universe are stationed 100 power centers of the fourth order. They function to downstep and otherwise to modify the seven power circuits emanating from superuniverse headquarters, thus making them applicable to the services of the constellations and systems. The local astronomical catastrophes of space are of passing concern to these power centers. They are engaged in the orderly dispatch of effective energy to the subsidiary constellations and systems. They are of great assistance to the creator suns during the later times of universe organization and energy mobilization. These centers are able to provide intensified lanes of energy useful for interplanetary communication between important inhabited points. Such a lane or line of energy, sometimes also called an energy path, is a direct circuit of energy from one power center to another power center, or from one physical controller to another controller. It is an individualized stream of power and stands in contrast to the free space movements of undifferentiated energy.
Okay, so that last part, see, they're really stressing. Yeah, okay, now we're down to the level for a lot of what we're thinking about. Think of it in simple, you know, grid-like fashion with nodes. The centers and controllers are nodes in an energy distribution grid, you know, with literally beaming lines of energy from point A to point B. Okay? So think about the picture. So from, you know, let's put it in our super universe. So from Uversa, there's one of those centers on Uversa that's sending a channel of energy to our minor sector. Not to directly to these centers, you know, but to the whole minor sector, bathing the minor sector. Okay, and then these centers, you know, are, you know, bathed in this beam, if you will, from Uversa, and are taking a hold of it. And see, that's why they went through all, you know, specifying all of this, you know, lane and line and whatnot. Okay, see, now finally, you've lost really the ubiquity, and it's from this point on, you know, it's very much a point-to-point phenomenon. See, so that's why that stressing the point-to-point is here in this subsection, because before that, you had this whole bath of the minor sector with all 100 local universes getting bathed by that one center on Uversa. But now it's brought to a point, and then it's just going to be point to point after that in this downstepping process. Okay, so you know, just to appreciate, you know, you can ask yourself, well, you know, why didn't they say that, you know, up front or in one of the, you know, figure out why they stuck all of that stress in this one. Yeah, just so you can see, you can definitely understand why. All right, let's see. Then, so right up front, you've got the question, why are there 100 on each local universe capital? Because there's 100 constellations in a local universe. So here you're starting to, you know, see, okay, you know, and it's definitely going to be tailored to each constellation still. And you're going to have this definite point to point, you know, that you're going to, you know, send it to one constellation, okay? So that's why there's 100, because you have 100 constellations in a local universe. They're doing whatever, downstepping and modifying. They're making it even more specific now to a particular constellation. So each constellation has got a difference, and they have to tailor it to that constellation. All right, and then a very important thing that they threw in. Oh, you got a question?
Well, wouldn't each constellation still be a part existing in the ocean that is engulfing
Yes. Right. The ocean is still there, and that might come up in a little bit, okay. Reminding us of the ocean. But right now, you see, so that was one thing I was going to stress. Notice they don't seem to be talking about the ocean here. They're just talking about this point-to-point stuff. Yeah, so in other words, you see, it's a local universe level, capital level. We don't seem to be so immediately concerned with the ocean, but with this getting it to the point where it's very much definitively this grid, this linear grid. See, so that's telling you something about, who's in charge of what in this whole system. So you see that the local universe ones are really focusing on the linear part. Like I said, we'll pick up the ocean in a second here. Now, a very important thing they throw in here, this bit about the local astronomical catastrophes of space are a passing concern to these power centers. They are engaged in the orderly dispatch of effective energy to the subsidiary constellations and systems. Okay, two things, one factual and one, or maybe you should say scientific, and one philosophic point that they're trying to make there. The scientific point is the one that's most immediately obvious. What astronomical catastrophes, what are these astronomical catastrophes they're referring to? Supernovas blowing up. Is the biggie. So what kind of, factually, scientifically, what kind of a level of energy manipulation are we talking about here that these beings are doing? It's at a magnitude where supernovas are of passing concern. Okay? From a current scientific perspective, we think supernovas like, it impacts, for a while it shines brighter than the whole galaxy, and we think of it as this gigantically important thing. It's like, it's not insignificant. We aren't talking about something that's so huge that's a pesky flea, necessarily. It's of concern, but just passing. In a temporal context, it is negligible. Long-term process. So, so that's telling you you're dealing with really massive beings. So like when they said occupying an enormous area on the capital sphere, of the super universe. Because, first of all, because they are enormous. They are vast beings that are working at levels, greater than supernova-like energies, okay? Coming into their body, being channeled out, without breaking a sweat, okay? Okay? Very massive beings. Okay, then the other, the philosophic thing there is, if you watch any show, scientific show, that's trying to talk about the big picture of how the elements, how the energy that we experience here got to be here, the fundamental mover and controller, director of energy in the current scientific story is those supernovas. The story that current scientists tell is how energy gets distributed about is via supernovas making it and blowing up, and sending it out. Or stars making it and supernovas blowing it out and blowing up and sending it out. Okay? Supernovas are the power directors in current scientific theory. They fill this, because if you're going to try to understand how things got to be there, you got to have some way of understanding how things got distributed around and whatnot. They're the movers and shakers in the current story. See, so they're telling you between the lines, no. That's a passing concern. The primary reason that you have what you have here, that you have what you need here, is because it was put here by these beings. It wasn't just a coincidence that supernovas put it here.
Just happened to blow our way.
Okay. So that's in one passing sentence, you know, they just decimate, you know, all the rationalization schemes that you'll hear on any science show or in any science course.
It's a benevolent supernova.
Okay. So that's a huge philosophic thing. They're trying to, universe is mind made and personality managed. It's not managed by supernovas. Okay, in a random fashion. Yep.
William would like to know, do these enormous beings have arms and legs and torso and so on?
We're going to talk about their body in a little bit.
Was Bapanosa on target at all?
I don't know. Okay, so that's, you know, that's a very important philosophic thing in passing there. All right, so that's the picture they're giving you. So like I said, they seem to be really focusing on getting these lanes, lines, paths. Oh, and we should mention, who else, you know, is involved here in this process of setting up these lines of energy? You've got the centers and the controllers, but it's not just a material energy line that they're laying out, remember. Fundamentally, what they want to lay out is a mind energy conduit. You can't do that with just matter energy. So who are those beings? Do you remember who the beings that lay out the spiritual energy in parallel?
About it. And a rebellion causes one of them to go away.
Right, and they're the ones that are kind of controlling it and, you know, turn off the, you know,
switch.
You know, turn off the spiritual energy so the mind, you know, there isn't mind energy as a superadditive consequence between the two. Mm-hmm. Okay, who are those beings? Anyone remember?
Universe
circuit supervisors. All right, so just always remember, because they don't bring it up in here. They're just talking about the material side. But every time they're talking about one of these lines, you know, if it's, you know, for communication especially, you know, remember that you've got these universe circuit supervisors. So you have these two, it's like two capacitor plates sort of, you know, that are being laid out in this long line. You know, and there's mind energy in between the two, you know, energies as a superadditive consequence. And you're plugging a being's mind into that mind conduit, you know, on each end, and there's a communication mind to mind across space. Okay, so, all right, so now let's see what happens when you drop down to the constellations.
5 constellation centers. 10 of these living power centers are stationed in each constellation, functioning as energy projectors to the 100 tributary local systems. From these beings, there go forth the power lines for communication and transport, and for the energizing of those living creatures who are dependent upon certain forms of physical energy for the maintenance of life. But neither the power centers nor the subordinate physical controllers are otherwise concerned with life as a functional organization.
Okay, so this is one of the classic things that you'll see with the power beings. Blah, 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 these beings don't have anything directly to do with life. It's like, well, why did the word life or living occur 50 times in the paragraph then? Okay, notice these living power, you know, they made a point of throwing the adjective in, you know, living power centers, living creatures, maintenance of life, concerned with life. Right. You know that they're, okay. So the first thing that gives you a clue is there aren't 100 of these constellation centers, one for each local system. There's 10. Why is there 10? Because there's 10 forms of energy, one for each form, 3 of which are living energies. That ocean that Jeanette was asking about, what about the ocean? Isn't the ocean still in play? Yes. So once you get down to the constellation level, they're dealing with the lines of energy, you know, with the 7, but those other 3 that are in an ocean still are being taken a hold of by these centers. Okay, so these centers obviously have a lot to do with, like they're pointing out, making sure that those 3 living energies are what they need to be you know, down in the local systems. Remember, life is different in each local system. You know, you have a, like, you know, with the Adam and Eve, you know, you have one, you know, an initial pair of material sons and daughters in each local system, and all, you know, are offspring of that one pair, and the pair is attuned to life in that system, so that, you know, they and their progeny can mate with all the biologic creatures in that local system. But you can't mate, they can't mate with ones in the other, you know, neighboring local system, because the life is slightly different there. Yeah. You know, not to mention, you know, you've got beings like, say, non-breathers, you know, that directly are getting their energy intake from the master physical controllers, you know, coming down from here, from the constellation centers, you know, like they're referring to there, beings that need, you know, they don't eat and drink like we do, but they need energy input because there's energy output in their metabolic processes. So, you know, they get it directly from the master physical controllers or plugged into them. Okay, so here you see, so we've been descending down, and when we get down to the constellation, that ocean comes back in. Okay, in particular the three living energies. And you go, huh. So we talked about, they mentioned the ocean when we were at Super Universe headquarters, and they mentioned the ocean here at the constellation. We know that when the local universe gets settled in light and life, the most highs at the constellation level really become the deputies of the Ancients of Days. That all the intervening levels are skipped, and there's this very tight linkage between the Ancients of Days on the Super Universe capital and the most highs on the constellation capitals. Here we're seeing life, you know, linkage directly, skipping over major sector, minor sector, even local universe capital. The Ancients of Days are part of a threefold parentage for life carriers because of this. I mean, because they're involved in this, you know, bringing the essentials of living ministry down. And you see it here. Remember, they mentioned that all this purposing that's going on is heading towards having, when the grand universe is settled in light and life, when the seven super universes are settled in light and life, the purposing there will match up with the pattern in the pattern universe. See, so here you see a foretaste of the feast to come. That already in the right from the get-go, the way the centers are put together, there's this presaging of the end of this direct association between the Ancients of Days and the Most Highs. Or, you know, here, even though these beings are not directly associated with the administration of the Most Highs or the Ancients of Days, but see, that's another thing. You know, power-wise, there's already that linkage. And eventually, there will be an administrative linkage, too, that matches up with that power linkage that was there from the beginning. And it's about life more than it is about, you know, wood molecules, okay, or whatever, dirt clods. Because the universe was created to be inhabited. See, so all of this is, you can, once you begin to know the patterns, you can see how this is all, it's not a coincidence that all will come out in the end, because all is set up from the beginning so that it can come out in the end. no one has to scramble when the local universe is set to light and life to make sure there's this fundamental linkage between the constellation level and the super universe capital. It's already here. Okay, so that's what's going on. So, now exactly, you know, what these modifications are and stuff, especially with the life, the living energies, you know, how would I know? They are definitely doing whatever they need to do to make sure that that everything is tuned to the life, all the way down to the planet. All right, so now we drop down to the system level, local system level.
6. System centers. One supreme power center is permanently assigned to each local system. These system centers dispatch the power circuits to the inhabited worlds of time and space. They coordinate the activities of the subordinate physical controllers and otherwise function to ensure the satisfactory distribution of power in the local system. The circuit relay between the planets depends upon the perfect coordination of certain material energies and upon the efficient regulation of physical power.
Okay, so two things. One, if it wasn't obvious from the previous one where it was 10 instead of 100, and you know, and here it's just one. One of these power centers, high or low, could handle a whole bunch of you know, lower level units in the hierarchy. You know, so you know, that's how you know that when they say there's 1,000 on the super universe capital, it's not because one couldn't handle 1,000 minor sectors just quantitatively. He could. There's this qualitative distinction, like I said. I mean, that's why there's 1,000, because there's one for each of the minor sectors. You have this specialization that's going on. And so one is just involved in one kind of specialization. One is involved in a different specialization. But when you get down here, I mean, there's all this specialization, all the inhabited worlds in a local system, but you just have one center at the local system capital level. So, yeah, he can handle all, you know, there's not so great a variability that he can't handle it all himself, okay, in terms of the quality differential. As we're going to read, I mean, these are vast beings with a lot of intricacy, but they can't do an infinite number of distinctions. They're finite beings. They can only do a finite number of distinctions. So as long as the distinctions necessary or can be handled within one being, and one being does it. But if it gets to where it's beyond what one being has the variability to do simultaneously, then you've got to have multiple beings. Yeah.
I'm kind of lost about what is this power, energy regulation? What is the physical energy regulation? What exactly are they doing? I mean...
That's a good question. I mean, we obviously can't answer the details much. However, if you think about that, for instance, think about this, the kind of the mystery of them saying that electronic level energies, you know, so in other words, you know, when you get to talking about photons, electrons, neutrinos, protons, you know, neutrons, atoms, you know, whatnot, you know, all that sort of stuff that we're familiar with, that kind of energy manifestation. They're saying that that has a fundamental sevenfold foundation under it. And you're going, well, okay, how do I know that? I mean, I don't know of anything in science, I don't think, that speaks to that. Well, remember, they remind you of in paper 42. Yes, you do. You do know about a sevenfoldness. You see it, you know, amazingly in sort of the lowest energy levels that you first started playing with in science, chemistry levels of energy. You see a sevenfoldness in the periodic table, you know, reflecting the energy system of the electrons around the nucleus, showing a sevenfold periodicity. That's why. Because there's this foundational sevenfoldness. Now, you go, well, are you saying that oxygen molecules are different from one place to another? See, no, I'm not saying that. I said that already. But there's the fact that you have this very definitive foundation that in terms of just what we observe, other than that little clue in the periodic table, you don't even really notice. You don't notice it, you know, when you're studying the isotopes, when you're studying the nuclei and stuff like that. You don't really, I mean, remember, there's this absonite foundation of things. And that is going to come into play in ways that we don't have any idea of now. Like, for instance, in a particular region, you're going to have, you're going to take the physical energy there, and the master physical controllers are going to do something with it, and the Maranja power supervisors are going to chime in with spiritual energy, and they're going to make Maranja substance. well, maybe tweaking things with those seven won't change your oxygen molecules, but maybe it'll change what your Maurantia substance. I mean, you know, you could speculate about a lot of things. What they're talking about is the subtleties. Now, obviously, when you're talking about the three living energies, I mean, you know, there could be all kinds of variations since we don't really know anything about that stuff. But even with the material energy that we do know something about through, you know, a lot of scientific investigation, what they're suggesting is there's ways that they might be altering the foundations which don't affect the, you know, the basic sort of crudest finite expressions that you observe, but its usefulness in more subtle ways will be modified. Maybe say it that way. The coarse ways that it's used won't change, but the subtle ways that we don't know anything about will change. So it's that kind of things. Then there's also just the issue, like I said, I mean, just sort of distribution issues. I mean, they need to, you know, if there's not an inhabited planet right there, I don't beam anything right there. You know, and then the other thing they were mentioning is in this context. Notice what they're saying, the circuit relay between the planets. So we're thinking in this very point-to-point context. They're saying, let's say you have a master physical controller on planet A and a master physical controller on planet B, and they set up a line of energy between the two. They're telling you here that they need the environment just right for them to be able to do that. And this system center make sure that the environment is proper so that they can do that on their own. If the environment wasn't controlled by this, you know, one that rules the whole local system, this center, they couldn't do that point to point on the planets. Because, you know, as you can see there, you know, the next one is not, you know, planetary centers. You're beaming down from this center, but you aren't, you know, you don't have a center, so there's a variation here in this distribution grid as it transitions from the centers to the controllers. And they're just reminding, you know, of physics that we don't know anything about, but they have to take care of all these details of making sure that the environment is such that the physical controllers, the moving physical controllers, can set up lines of energy on planets or between planets, you know, however they need to do. Okay, so that's the more quantitative thing that they would be regulating, those sorts of issues, distribution issues. But there must be all kinds of subtle qualitative things, too, that we really can't understand.
And underlying all of that, the Supreme Being is upholding all of this.
Right, yeah, there's all those issues. Right, it's extremely complicated. You know, and the fact that the Supreme is involved, I mean, that's why. You know, like I point out, you know, why is on average every 10th planet an experimental world? Because, you know, roughly every 10 planets, the life carriers go, you know, we need to do a test here and figure out where the Supreme is. We got to keep, you know, in step with the Supreme. So they do a little test and figure out, okay, so the Supreme is there. Okay, and they make sure that they're synced up properly with the evolving Supreme. You know, and the fun thing about that is they... is that it's not precisely every 10, but on average. So in other words, the life carriers know when it's time to do an test, and after, you know, in the early days of the universe of universes, after a while they notice, huh, did you notice that it's averaging out to be about every 10? See, so there's an example where the tenfold is not immediately in play, but it subtly comes out, just like the sevenfold comes out in the periodic table. See, these 7 and 10 patterns are very powerful, and so even when they're a recessive phenomenon, essentially, you know, they will have some minor manifestation. So, on average, it's every 10. Okay, so what else is going on in there? Well, let's just mention in passing here. So, with our local system, our system center... The Satania System Center is not on Gerasim. He's on a dark island of space that's, you know, nearby to Gerasim. it's the actual gravity, that dark island is the actual gravitational center of the local system. And Jerison was made, you know, close to it. So he's actually, you know, not on an architectural world like, you know, all these ones we've been reading are obviously on the architectural worlds, you know, at the constellation or local universe level, etc. He's on a dark island. We'll you know, they'll see, they're going to point out that there's two places they can be, either on a dark island or on an architectural world. Let's see. we're going to read. We're going to talk about that too, about that boredom thing. Let's see. Maybe just one other thing before we read the last one. You know, notice they coordinate the activities. You know, like I was just talking about how, you know, there starts to be kind of a quasi mother-like thing going on, and you even see that when you're, you know, when you look on the chart of the psychic circles in the sevenfold here, the hierarchy of mothers, you know, I put down there beings that aren't technically mothers on that zeroth cosmic level. Rather than a womb of mind, you could think of more of a cocoon, maybe you could say, of mind. Those mechanical controllers, are, you know, are the wombs of mechanical mind. Remember, I was talking about they're involved with those living energies here, see? And, you know, so you're starting to get to the point, and you can see it expressed there, that these power beings are kind of laying the foundations for what the mothers do. Yeah, and they point out in the evolution of our solar system when that cocoon was set up about our solar system, that's when it got the name Mon Masha, which literally means the mother place of man. You know, those mechanical controllers are setting up a little environment, a sheltered bay, you know, in all of this vast coursing energy, especially of our constellation, they tell us, you know, this little womb-like region, you know, that, you know, they're going to have mechanical mind in, and then, you know, mother is going to come in and give higher mind in. Okay. So that's why they're throwing in the coordination, you know, that you're starting to get this, you know, really see this ubiquity thing in play. All right, then the last group here.
7, unclassified centers. These are the centers who function in special local situations, but not on the inhabited planets. The individual worlds are in the charge of the master physical controllers and receive the encircuited lines of power dispatched by the power center of their system. Only those spheres of the most extraordinary energy relationships have power centers of the seventh order, acting as universe balance wheels or energy governors. In every phase of activity, these power centers are the full equals of those who function on the higher units of control. But not one space body in a million harbors such a living power organization.
Okay, so besides the definitive hierarchy, as I mentioned, you know, up above about supernova, you know, those cataclysms of passing concern, there is an awful lot of background energy phenomena in play. And they're pointing out that more important in a long-term setting than things like supernovas are what current science doesn't, you know, appreciate, that there's these very massive objects, which current science says are impossible, these very massive solid objects, these dark islands of space, you know, that wield a lot of influence in the astronomical environment. And so you have to have... you know, so think about it. It's like just because of their massive physical nature, they're directing some, and so beings have to step in you know, in some managed way, to shepherd that natural directing that that object is doing just because of what it is. And because, yeah, because of its vast influence. It has an influence that's on the scale of what the power being, the power centers in the hierarchy are doing, see? So they have to strike step with it. So there's an example of, you know, those things just come about through all these things they don't have any control over, you know, what the master architects are doing, you know, the curiosities of the Almighty Supreme and the unqualified absolute and all this, you know, things happen. And they have to just deal with it dynamically, you know. And so they literally do. You know, these objects, these dark islands are very rigid. You can get one of these massive beings, can lock himself onto it and take charge of what's going on.
That's why
they're on those, so they can take charge, and so that you don't have this undirected influence that is, you know, significant at the level of what they're managing things.
But that's not the reason the dark gravity bodies are there.
They don't even totally know why it's there.
Okay.
Initially, I'm sure, as you evolve, as the universe of universes evolves, more and more we'll go, oh. So that's why that galaxy was formed and then came in like that, and that led to that dark island and blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, you know, there's no coincidences in supremacy. You know, when you look back on this whole process, this evolutionary process, all of the seeming randomness and chaos will go away. And, you know, and it has a twofold, you know, mystery, let's say it that way, or secret. That's even better. It has a twofold secret behind it. That the one is the ubiquity of things like the Almighty Supreme and the Unqualified Absolute. The other is intense micromanagement, you know, all along the way by these power beings. Okay, so, you know, they're going to bring this up again, but just point out, I mean, even more fundamentally, than the reason, you know, for the reason why there aren't centers on inhabited worlds, it's not so much that that they're not there because you don't need them in the grid. They're not there because they can't be there. If they grabbed a hold of this planet and tried to make this their home base, they would tear the planet apart. You know, they would just disassemble the planet into a sea of automatons, you know, if they tried to grab a hold of it, okay? It was just, you know, worse than vaporize the planet, okay? You know, so it takes an architectural sphere or one of these, you know, like automatonic crystals, basically, these dark islands of space, you know, to be rigid enough for them to grab a hold of and not disassemble, okay? Okay. However, there's some pretty amazing, you know, master physical controllers that are resident on the planet. Centers are serious stuff. All right. It's like I think we could cohabitate this planet with a supernova. No, not compatible. All right, so let's read a little bit more about you know, the domain of the power centers here. What they do here.
What's the significance? Not one space body in a million harbor such a.
Okay, well, you can do a little thinking there. They're about to remind you again that you have about upwards of 10 billion these centers. I was going to explain that to them. Let me just do it now. I mean, if you think about it, okay, there's one on each local system capital. Well, if you had, you know, all 7 billion local systems, that's only 7 billion right there. There's only 70 million constellations, you know, so 10 on each, that's only 700 million. I mean, you know, it's obviously there's, let's say there's 2 billion, you know, more of these unclassified centers. Not one in a million. You know, they're giving you some sense of how many objects. I mean, you know, let's say there's 10 quadrillion objects that they're thinking about, and not you know, one in a million has one of these on it. You know, that's that they're giving you a little sense. Remember when they tell you they actually know the physical object registry of this planet, you know, but it's a number that's so huge, right? I mean,
even the treasury couldn't count it.
Here's a, you know, just between the lines, see, they're giving you kind of a boost up factor there. You know, that you want, if you want to think about how many objects you're kind of are of major significance in this sort of this reference that they're referring to. I mean, it's something in the order of quadrillions that they're thinking about. All right. So let's get in. You'll see the, you know, right away in the first sentence they mention this, that there's somewhere more than 10 billion.
Section 3, the domain of power centers. The supreme power centers distributed throughout the superuniverses number, with their associates and subordinates, upward of 10 billion. And they are all in perfect synchrony and complete liaison with their paradise progenitors, the seven supreme power directors. The power control of the grand universe is thus entrusted to the keeping and direction of the seven master spirits, the creators of the seven supreme power directors.
Okay. So even though you have this whole complicated system, this, you know, it mentions subordinates because you have this whole hierarchy, you know, there's even, you know, like the associates, if you want to think about the Havona centers, you know, you have this whole complicated system. But when all is said and done, we're talking about beings that are basically a manifestation of what the master spirits are up to, which is a manifestation of what the infinite spirit is up to. You know, this is part of the power ministry of the infinite spirit, in contrast to the personal ministry, you know, angelic, the personal ministry of the infinite mother spirit. And I purposely said it that way. You know, that contrast between referring to the third source and center as the infinite spirit or referring to the infinite mother spirit. Do you have, you know, are you thinking about, you know, is the thing that's immediately in play not mother deity, but just, you know, the spirit deity, and in an impersonal mode? And that very fact that, you know, we mentioned how we were starting to see them referring to coordinate, and I was, you know, pointing out that with the hierarchy of mothers, you know, remember, in our local universe of Nebadon, we didn't initially have a creative mother spirit. We had a creative spirit, no mother deity, just spirit deity, downstepped expression of the infinite spirit, just spirit deity. And when that entity, really, you know, from our perspective, was here as the creative spirit, it was working most closely with whom? The power beings. I see. Because that's, you know, these power beings are all descendant from the infinite spirit. And so that downstepped expression of the infinite spirit is syncing up with them. Once she becomes the creative mother spirit, so really she's a downstepped expression of the infinite mother spirit, it's not so much immediately with the power beings. See? You know? And at that point, you know, it truly becomes a local universe because, you know, you have a womb of mind now, you know, a localized womb of mind. And, you know, before that, it's just kind of a region of the Milky Way galaxy that you're trying to get collected, you know, and a hold of. All the power beings are trying to get a hold of a collection of matter and lock onto it and keep it together, so as it goes around and around the Milky Way galaxy, it doesn't shear apart because of the differential rotation. They hold it together so it goes around like this. You know, but then, you know, once they have that matter going around like that, you can establish a womb of mind to follow it along.
Now, briefly, science must see these masses moving like that.
No. We can't. We can barely see past the end of our nose, remember. I mean, you know, there's so much gas and dust in the plane of the Milky Way. you know, we have a hard time seeing very far at all. There's lots of speculation. And the extent to which we can directly see, you know, like across the whole Milky Way, you're only seeing that hydrogen gas that is the least managed fact in the entire local, or in the entire galaxy, Milky Way galaxy. So if you see that least managed fact, you basically don't see really any pattern in it, except some of the spiral pattern. To see all of this structure, this managed structure, you have to be able to see above the unmanaged level, and we can't. It's too opaque.
Are things like the Virgo cluster a part of the Milky Way?
No.
So we can see out that
far. Right, that's out in the outer space levels.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Why is it that some Urantia book readers think that now that we have got Hubble, that we can see the entire universe?
We can see out in the outer space levels, and,
but we can't see even to the central universe.
Right. That's just simply because, imagine I'm standing here, this is the Milky Way galaxy, this table, and I'm standing right here where my fingertip is, and I want to see the central universe, which is over there by Don. Well, I've got to be able to see through the Milky Way. Well, how well can my fingers see through this solid table? Can't see at all. It's opaque. That's the way the disk of the Milky Way is. You know, if you look at pictures with Hubble or anything like that, I mean, there's a whole swath in the sky that's devoid of galaxies and stuff because you can't see in the plane of the Milky Way.
So Hubble's not seeing beyond the Milky Way.
If it looks this way, it can.
Right.
It can see all this stuff, but it can't see that direction through the Milky Way.
Outer space levels, but not toward the central.
Right, so it's just you're in the plane like this. You can't see the stuff that's right here, but I can turn around. I can see everything over here. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Do they realize that they're looking? Try to point it the other way and see nothing?
Oh yeah. I mean, you can penetrate a little bit further. You go to longer wavelengths. Infrared can see a little bit further. Microwaves can see further. The more you go to those longer wavelengths. To get to see any matter, the less managed that matter is.
Yeah.
See, so the less structure you'll see. Right. So but eventually, when we are not limited by these things, like they say, you'll be able to, discern the 8 sectors. You won't be able to, there's 2 sectors that are on the opposite side. You can't see, again because of the Milky Way. So those 2 sectors, there's 2. Pie wedges that are over on the other side, you can't see. But the 8, including ours, you'll be able to distinguish those. And they say if you can get above, if you got above the Milky Way and look down, you could see the minor sectors too, not just the pie wedges of the major sectors.
James Webb telescope saw any of
this? No, none of these things are going to really go very far in that sense of being able to sort things out. I mean, not to mention. You've got all kinds of other issues with misunderstandings in current science about how far things are away and all this sort of stuff. So, you might be seeing something, but if you you're way off on how far it is away, if you do it, plot it all out on a map, the dots will all be in the wrong places, and so you won't see the pattern. The fact that we can't just lay a ruler out on the Milky Way and say, oh, this thing is, 5.8 inches. And, we have to just totally guess how far all these things are away. So, and the relatives are pointing out you're way off on a lot of things. Way off.
It's just the telescope.
It's 200,000 light years of the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and you're clueless of that fact. Okay.
And I just want to clear this misconception up, too, in that the piece in the Urantia book where it says, it's outdated. It doesn't mean it's incorrect. It's just that they need to update the book to what our new science is.
You have to be very careful with that. There's not one error in the book. Show me a place in the book that manifests unwise judgment. That's an error. Okay. You can show me places where They had to use what's now an outdated number. But, of course, the point wasn't to reveal that number in the first place, because after all, it's a number that we now have a better, you know, we can get it ourselves. So that sort of thing is outdated, but that's not the point. You know, the example I always use is the Hubble constant in here. You know, it's the old Hubble constant. It's off by a factor of 10, say. Okay, that's not because the Relligers didn't know a better value. They're not allowed to reveal something that we can figure out ourselves. It's like, well, why did they even mention it then? Yeah, that's what you want to think about. If you think that the whole point of the fifth epoch of Revelation was to give you the exact value of the Hubble constant, I mean, you got a lot of rethinking to do. They use that in a particular paragraph to some greater end. Figure out what it is. And all it means is, you know, they give you a velocity and they give you the slope. You know, that's that classic thing in the, you know, the Hubble diagram. You know, and they want to give you a distance indirectly. You know, you could change the sentence to use a better Hubble constant, change the velocity to the random one that they picked in there to get the same distance out. I mean, the point of what they're trying to give you, disclose indirectly, is the distance that putting those two numbers together give you. That's the only sense in which something is outdated. No other sense. And when it's a fact that stands alone, and it's not an immediate juxtaposition with another fact, and you're obviously supposed to multiply them or divide them, it's just sitting there, and it doesn't agree with a current measurement, that's because it's impossible for us to get a correct measurement. So if it tells you that the Andromeda galaxy is about 1 million light years away, that's not because back, you know, in the 20s, that's what we thought it was. And that's now an outdated fact. That's a standalone statement. So it would be a violation of the Revelation mandate for them to put that in there if we can figure out the correct one. The only reason that number can be in there is because it's impossible for us to get the correct answer. And the more we think about it, the more incorrect our number gets. First we thought it was 2 million. Now we think it's like 3 million. Our correct number is getting worse and worse. Proof that what I'm saying is true, that the only reason that number can be in there is because it's impossible for us to get the correct answer. So they're allowed to give it to us as a way of us calibrating our system. They're saying it's actually about 1 million away. If you get a different answer than that, you need to change the calibration of your system until you get that answer. That's the correct answer. That you can't know, it has to be given to you, disclosed to you, okay? And it is. Same way with the, you know, the ages of the geologic beds.
Yeah.
They're different than what we figure out because it's impossible for us to get those correct numbers. If it was possible for us to get the correct numbers, none of those paragraphs could have those numbers on them. That would be a violation of the Revelation mandate for those numbers to be in the book, okay? So the only reason those numbers are in there is because it's impossible for us to get the right answer, the correct answer, I should say. Yeah, that's, you have to think about the book properly.
Is that what they're calling the unearned knowledge? Is the numbers that they give us?
If we could figure out the number, but they gave it to us before we figured it out, that would be unearned knowledge.
Oh, okay. And that's against the rules.
Yeah. So if they gave you something, and now we think we've gotten it, you know, well, they look like they violated the rules. They gave us unearned knowledge. No. You notice that the two numbers don't agree. It's because the one you get is incorrect.
Yeah.
You can't earn your way to the answer. You can't get the correct answer. It's impossible.
Yeah, and it amazes me how many Urantia book readers default to today's science versus what the book says. It causes so much grief in the community.
Is it a revelation or not?
Yeah.
It's not the fifth epical affirmation of human ignorance. I mean, where in the book does it say that? So why does everyone assume that?
Where's
it?
Well,
She would archive that.
She would have.
It does seem to be, you know, a psychological reactionary phenomenon where people do not want to be seen as being like creationists.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when they're having to psychologically distance themselves from creationists in a linear fashion, it ends up being that they pick the opposite side and say, well, then if science comes up with something, I ought to agree with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, while that's generous, it doesn't always work.
And it's, you know, is, you know, when you boil it down to things like, you know, creationism, I mean, it's like, well, okay, I can't show any signs of believing in the magic man, so I should be a strong advocate of magic matter. No, you shouldn't do that either. Because that's what those quote-unquote scientists, those so-called scientists are telling you is the reality, that there's magic matter. I mean, another thing is just the psychological foundation of the levels of meaning, the level of fear. It's courageous in independent cosmic thinking that you have to take a hold of. It takes courage to recognize that every authority who has voice on this planet is false. Do you have the courage, do you have the integrity to stand on your own two feet like that? To know that every authority that rules your life is false. All those scientists, all the things they tell you with absolute certitude, and it's right there in black and white, and it's in a refereed journal, and blah, 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 those are false statements. Can you handle that fact? Or is part of your ability to manage your day-to-day life predicated on a religion of authority? You know, religions of authority aren't just the things that are actually called religions and have a church with a steeple. You know, there are also those scientists. Any ism, you know, it puts itself forward, especially in the modern age, is one of these alternative religions of authority. Can you stand independent of any religion of authority? Do you have the objective perspective to be able to see what they've observed, see through their ignorance, how they interpreted it, see to what objective reality they actually did see, and put it in the proper context? Or are you subject to whatever they say? You have to rise up above the level of all the minds on the planet. You know, all those minds that are vastly smarter than you are. I mean, there's countless minds on the planet that are smarter than me. Way, way, way smarter than me. But I can get above them. Because it's not just about how smart you are. If you've got an objective vantage point with the help of the revelation, you just get up and look down on them. Okay, even with your little, you know, tiny little mind seated on a tiny little pea brain with no biologic uplift and everything, you can do it. You can get up there and look down, and you can see that the kings of the world do not have any clothes on. The emperor has no clothes. I mean, it's very easy to see through this stuff that they say. I mean, once you get an objective picture, you know. Some astronomer puts out an article and says, oh, we just made this incredible discovery. We discovered this vast cloud of matter. Oh, really? And you say, how far away is it? Oh, it's 2 billion light years away. Well, did you know there's nothing that far away? It's actually a lot closer than that. So your thumb isn't as big as it seems, is it? It's bigger than the moon. No.
Only if I hold it.
I mean, the only reason they think that thing is really huge is because they think it's insanely far away. They think it's in the third outer space level. There isn't anything out there. Okay? Wow. That thing is much, much closer. So it's actually just a little blob, and it's completely irrelevant. It means nothing. They think it means everything. Oh, we just discovered that all of our theories are validated. No. Your theories are invalid. The observation is invalid. Everything is invalid about what you're talking about. Can you get to the point where you can see that and you're not just some wild-eyed religionist who believes something? I don't believe anything. It's self-evident. It's obvious. I can see that initial assumption is false. Or it's been revealed to me that it's false. I mean, I can't see that there's nothing 3 billion light years away, but I can read this and I've come to recognize that it actually is a revelation, So the facts that are disclosed within it are valid facts.
So how then do you see this working to inform our science in such a way that we may actually get to the point of truly understanding the universe and the cosmos that we live in? I mean, as a civilization.
Yeah, I mean, the only way historically it's ever happened is by the attrition of the ignorant. I mean, the old has to die away, and it dies away because their rationalization schemes, because they're predicated on false initial assumptions, get more and more and more complicated every year, every decade, till finally they're just so insanely complicated that even the dense can go, you know, I think we're on the wrong track here. This is just way too convoluted. It can't be this complicated. And so, you know, the whole thing will collapse. No one will believe it anymore. And someone will have the courage to go, well, you know, maybe some of our fundamental assumptions are false. Like maybe the assumption, the same one that Lucifer made, that matter can manage itself. Maybe that's a false assumption. Maybe no matter how magical we make black holes, they just can't manage the universe. Maybe there has to be beings. Yeah, but how long will it be before I can explain to an astronomer that the reason that he thinks that that object is 3 billion light years away, the reason it has such a huge redshift is because there's associate transcendental master force organizers present in that galaxy. And as that photon is escaping the presence of their form, it is redshifted before it gets into free space and comes to you, your telescope. That's why that thing has that huge redshift. It's because a being altered the frequency of that photon by his presence. That's what he's trying to do. It just happens indirectly because he's there doing what he's doing. He's still active. And so photons get affected by his activity. They get redshifted. And so all those things out there where the force organizer is very active in the outer half of the second outer space level, all those galaxies, we think that they're really far away because they have these huge, those are not respiration redshifts. Okay, that's the fact of it. You got everything in the book to recognize that. But how long will it be before an astronomer can allow that the world was made by a primary eventuated master force organizer and the ultimatons and, you know, it was with an associate transit? You know, how long? You know, what kind of a cataclysm of civilization and of the philosophic system that we're struggling with, you know, has to occur before that will be allowed? It may have to be quite extreme. The only other option is, you know, some being plops himself, you know, and does the now for something totally different. Anyway, let's read some more.
The supreme power directors and all their associates, assistants, and subordinates are forever exempt from apprehension or interference by all the tribunals of all space. Neither are they subject to the administrative direction either of the superuniverse government of the Ancients of Days or of the local universe administration of the Creator Sons.
See, remember we mentioned about that. They aren't tied to the administration, but we saw the foretaste of the future administration that they will be tied with when you don't really have, you know, the local universe level of stuff, and, you know, and the Ancients of Days aren't working in the mode they're working in now. And
These power centers and directors are brought into being by the children of the Infinite Spirit. They are not germane to the administration of the Sons of God, though they affiliate with the Creator Sons during the later epochs of the universe material organization. But the power centers are in some way closely associated with the cosmic overcontrol of the Supreme Being.
by later there, remember, there's a whole period where the master physical controllers and the power centers are getting potential local universes put together, and then a creator sun on paradise, you know, looks out and says, well, okay, I got 10 to pick from. I'll take that one there. You know, that, you know, early stage one, you know, is what, you know, but then when he gets out there and then, you know, then in the those later stages, they're, you know, they're working together. You know, again, if we bring out the psychic circles in the sevenfold, you can see that, you know, why do they say that they they're in some way closely associated? You know, just remember the hierarchy here. You got the master physical controllers, above them the supreme power centers, above them the supreme power directors, and who's above that? The Almighty Supreme, right? I mean, you know, the Almighty Supreme is what they're referring to there, with the cosmic overcontrol of the Supreme Being. Yeah, here's the Supreme Being. You know, and we're talking about the physical cosmic overcontrol. That's the expression of that fact, is the Almighty Supreme. You know, there is that subtle influence. And the other being they mentioned, Infinite Spirit. See, so, you know, who are the two beings that are above those three? Who are the two controllers? The Almighty Supreme and the Infinite Spirit. So they're just reminding you, you know, of those, that over control, see, of these controllers. Okay. Yeah, let's see. Is there any? Yeah, no, yeah, let's just go on.
Power centers and physical controllers undergo no training. They are all created in perfection, are inherently perfect in action. Never do they pass from one function to another. Always do they serve as originally assigned. There is no evolution in their ranks, and this is true of all seven divisions of both orders. Having no ascendant past to revert to in memory, power centers and physical controllers never play. They are thoroughly businesslike in all their actions. They are always on duty. There is no provision in the universe scheme for the interruption of the physical lines of energy. Never for a fraction of a second can these beings relinquish their direct supervision of the energy circuits of time and space.
I see. So two things, you know, really in there. You know, this whole bit about mind-made and personality-managed, I mean, you know, right down to the nanosecond, okay? I mean, it's not just the Universal Father that if he blinked, everything would disappear. I mean, if any of these beings, you know, closed their eyes for 1 second, you know, 1 nanosecond, okay, the whole thing would just unravel, okay? And yet they're persons, very definitive persons, very personable persons. You know, how on earth is that compatible? How can you not blink once anyway? You know, in trillions and trillions of years. And, you know, they're giving you a little clue. One of the reasons why we have words like bored and things like that, it actually has to do with a superconscious initially sense of our ascension, of our evolution, of our, you know, that we're, because we're not a fixed point like they are, it gives us that awareness of differential. If you've never moved, you know nothing except where you are, and you're perfectly content. One of the fact that we're moving, and initially very ignorant of why and how and where and, you know, towards what, and that's why we have a lot of the issues that we have to deal with. We need to get control of that, you know. And, you know, we have at the lowest animal-like levels, the grass is always greener on the other side sort of consciousness, right? Because we're moving, okay? But they're not like that. They're not ascending or descending or even moving laterally, like they're saying. Okay, they're fixed points. And boy, especially the centers are really, I mean, they're not even mobile. Okay?
But they're coordinating phenomena.
Yeah.
So they're engaging movement.
Right.
They're all about
movement. Right, right. Of course, they're, you know, they're all about the universe of motion.
They're active.
Right. So, yeah, very good point. See, you notice that they have a reciprocal relation. They don't, because they're related with all, directly in touch with all motion, all, you know, the universe of motion, they don't need to be moving. They feel content by being part of the movingness of all things, so that they don't literally have to be moving.
The life of the party.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're about to read about them. I mean, you know, what's going on within them is, you know, they're this vast being. It, you know, it, they can find within themselves vistas of discovery that we have to go off to some far horizon to find, you know. You know, what's on that island way off there in the Pacific, you know? You know, they have an island way off in the Pacific within them. They're this vast phenomenon, you know, that is endlessly exploring new vistas in relationship to the universe of matter.
Do they get to partake in the reflectivity?
They're not directly part of, you know, that, no. Where were we? We just read those two paragraphs. Let's see. I think we got everything there, didn't we? Reflect on that some more about, you know, your own self, about issues of play and, you know, and that, and boredom and those sorts of things and how they're related to your nature.
But of course, in our work of eternity, we'll be reminded of the play of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. These guys can't be having it that hard.
Right.
It just can't. Right. They've got to be happy.
Right. They are.
There's a happiness.
Yeah, and see, okay, before we go on, just, yeah, that's a great way to talk about it, to use the word happy. They're persons.
Yeah.
Okay? That's a valid word to use. Because they're persons, they've chosen to be happy. And it's not a resignation. It's a complete duh. I mean, they look at what they've been given, you know, by nature. It's like, well, you know, that's a great choice. Let me choose that. And I'm happy. Who could ask for anything more? Okay.
Whistle while you work.
The directors, centers, and controllers of power have nothing to do with anything in all creation except power, material, or semi-physical energy. They do not originate it, but they do modify, manipulate, and directionize it. Neither do they have anything whatever to do with the physical gravity, except to resist its drawing power. Their relation to gravity is wholly negative.
See how they're reminding you of it, you know, the reflectivity mechanism, that sort of stuff, you know, is not part of what they're engaging. We'll get to it some when we get to the master physical controllers, but remember, you got a lot of these beings that have very definitive anti-gravity nature, just, you know, nature, you know, merely their presence is and not an anti-linear gravity, anti-absolute gravity, because, you know, they're coming down from the co-infinite, you know, so they have this super absolute nature that can, you know, that can transcend the absolute gravity of the aisle in a localized sense. You know, so, you know, we've mentioned that a number of times when you talk about that coming down from the infinite spirit or the infinite mother spirit, you can bring co-infinite, super absolute nature into play, like anti-physical gravity.
The power centers utilize vast mechanisms and coordinations of a material order in liaison with the living mechanisms of the various segregated energy concentrations. Each individual power center is constituted in exactly 1,000,000 units of functional control. And these energy-modifying units are not stationary, as are the vital organs of man's physical body. These vital organs of power regulation are mobile and truly kaleidoscopic in associative possibilities.
Okay, so, you know, set their personality aside. You know, we're just talking about, you know, their being. You know, I shouldn't say it that way either. We're just talking about their, let's just say, body, like they do, I guess.
Anatomy.
Yeah. Their, you know, their form, their self. Now, what kind of a self is personalized? Okay, so set the personality aside and let's examine the self. The self is this, incredible living mechanism, is the way we would think about it. Okay, they're like a living machine. It's also a person, by the way. Okay, and so not only, these various segregated energy concepts, not only do they have this kaleidoscopic nature themselves, and they're a vast being, but then they also have vast mechanisms. And so between external physical things and then themselves, they have this elaborate machine combination, living machine thing going on that they're engaging energy with. So no wonder it would take up vast areas on Universa and stuff like that. Okay, so it's going to be so amazing to be able to see this. It's just going to be so cool. It's going to be just yeah. Not to mention so many other things. Yes,
but how long will we hold still just to watch that?
Now, let me just pause for a second. You notice exactly 1 million. They made a point of saying exactly 1 million. So not only do you need to figure out the 1 million, but it literally is 1 million. It's exactly. Okay, now this million is not the same million that we saw with the Vona Center. It's a different thing. This one, let's talk about a little bit. We can unpack this one. This isn't so involved with all the details of the central universe. So why do they have a million parts? Say, a million independent parts. Okay, so when you're talking about the power centers that are out here in the super universes, you have the tenfoldness of, fundamental tenfoldness of, related to material things. And out here we have dual energy systems. Okay? So that's 10 times 10. The individuality out here is fundamentally 100-fold. And then you have three phases. Because remember, so you have independent phases because of the three-dimensionality of the absonites that this is all rooted in. So you have 100 times 100 times 100. You've got a million possible variations with that three phases and the 100-foldness of the individuality. So that's why they need a million. Okay, to be able to engage that million-foldness in any way they want to. It's got to be completely independent that they can engage that 100 times 100 times 100. So, remember that we haven't, like I said, a lot of times you'll just be talking about the 10 forms and but don't forget there's three phases of each of those. So that the three phases are always in play and they're always dealing with those three different phases too, even if it's just one of the seven forms, say. So they've got to have a million folds in order to span that whole space of 100 times 100 times 100. Now, wait a minute. That was all that seeming like rationalization scheme is all predicated on dual energy systems out here. In Havona, what kind of energy systems do they have there?
Triune.
Okay. So those Havona centers have to engage 10 times 10 times 10. They have to engage that 1,000-fold individuality in the central universe. And remember what they told you? Those Havona centers, one of them handles 1,000 different worlds. There's 1,000 different variations. So you have 1,000-foldness and 1,000 worlds. 1,000 times 1,000 is a million. So they can work in both places. They have exactly a million, which is what you need to span the space of both places. You say, well, what about the three-phase thing that was part of your scheme here? Well, remember, in Havona, that's basically an absonite domain. So you don't have that issue there. I mean, there, if you think of it just purely as an absonite domain, it's their X, Y, and Z. And it's just, there's just one thing. There's not three independent things. But when you project that down here, remember, each dimension of the absolute becomes a full, separate, independent, three-dimensional thing down here. So you have these three independent phases. So you don't have that there. You know, and when you think about it like that, you can also appreciate, see, why it's much more straightforward to just grab a hold of it in Havana, those Havana centers, and, okay, now it's perfectly controlled. Down here, you're dealing with what's going on as a projection. You're not dealing with it directly. You're dealing with it indirectly. You know, and that's why it gets spread over time. That not only do you, so you got to think about the sort of the spatial downstepping and projection, but that, it goes from eternity to time. Okay, and so it gets, So that's why they have a million, because whether they're in the central universe or out here, that's how many degrees of freedom that they need to have to engage what's going on. Yeah. Do you have something?
Well, no wonder they never get bored.
Right. Yeah. So not only is there a million degrees of freedom there, but there's how many different things can you do with that? And then, right. So and you get the impression that they're. Their skin is not opaque, see? That you can see all of this.
These guys are seeing something that they're describing.
And that question that came up from the webinar, it's like, well, do they have legs and arms? It's like, well, I mean, they have a form. There's going to be, his body ends here, and but what exactly that form is, I don't know. It seems like when you're talking about how vast they're doing, having them tottering, like an upside down pyramid on two legs seems a little bit, they probably have a real solid, they're more like, those sea creatures that have just one foot. That's probably more what they're like. They have just one big foot that they stand on in this vast form.
I picture them, like a motor or something, they're turning, but you've got a vast complex of moving things.
Right. And just remember that these parts, this is their self. So it's not just material energy, it's mindal energy. I mean, it's a living machine. So, it's beyond our comprehension what it's doing, what it would look like. Right. Some combination of what we would consider physical energy, and mindal energy in this elaborate complex self that a personality can encompass and control.
Yeah. It needs to be beautiful.
Oh, I mean, it's going to be so insanely beautiful. where does beauty come from? The Isle of Paradise. That's the pattern that is paradise. They're dealing directly with what's, that pattern of paradise. So, they're going to be fundamentally beautiful. It'll give you a foretaste of the feast to come when you're actually on the aisle and see the beauty of the aisle directly. Okay.
It is utterly beyond my ability to explain the manner in which these living beings encompass the manipulation and regulation of the master circuits of universe energy. To undertake to inform you further concerning the size and function of these gigantic and almost perfectly efficient power centers would only add to your confusion and consternation. They are both living and personal, but they are beyond your comprehension.
Enough said on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Outside of Havana, the supreme power centers function only on especially constructed architectural spheres or on otherwise suitably constituted space bodies. The architectural worlds are so constructed that the living power centers can act as selective switches to directionize, modify, and concentrate the energies of space as they pour over these spheres. They could not so function on an ordinary evolutionary sun or planet. Certain groups are also concerned in the heating and other material necessities of these special headquarters worlds. And though it is beyond the scope of Urantia knowledge, I may state that these orders of living power personalities have much to do with the distribution of the light that shines without heat. They do not produce this phenomenon, but they are concerned with its dissemination and directionization.
One of these days I'm going to figure out the whole light without heat thing totally. I'm still working on that. But so there's this mystery there. Just in passing there, you know, they could not so function on an ordinary evolutionary sun or planet. You're going, well, on a sun? It's a ball of gas. I mean, of course they couldn't stand on that. I mean, but why couldn't they stand on a solid world like the Earth? No. From their perspective, the Earth is not solid. It's just as fluffy as a ball of gas like the sun is. I mean, like I said, I mean, if they tried to engage it, they wouldn't meet any resistance. They would just eviscerate it. Okay.
Ultimate time crystal is what they're looking for.
Yeah, they're looking for something that's a lot more substantive than granite and basalt. Okay.
The power centers and their subordinate controllers are assigned to the work of all of the physical energies of organized space. They work with the three basic currents of 10 energies each. That is the energy charge of organized space, and organized space is their domain. The universe power directors have nothing whatever to do with those tremendous actions of force which are now taking place outside the present boundaries of the seven super universes.
Like the Virgo cluster. Yeah. The only beings that are involved in all that stuff that we see in all those photos are the force organizers. Yeah, none of these universe power directors have anything to do with anything that's going on out there, including the Andromeda Galaxy, as close as it is in relative terms, nothing to do whatsoever with it. And so that's why when you look at all those galaxies out there, like the Andromeda, seems to be a nice smooth disk. It's because it's not managed in any structure. I mean, it's just, the ubiquity of the force organizers, no one is doing any micromanaging. Yeah. But if you looked at the seven, super universe galaxies, you wouldn't see that smoothness like you see in all those galaxies out there. Because it's intensely micromanaged. It's broken up into all kinds of what would look like completely artificial forms. Yeah, there's nothing that looks artificial when you look at those things out there, because there's no power beings out there.
The power centers and controllers exert perfect control over only seven of the 10 forms of energy contained in each basic universe current. Those forms which are partly or wholly exempt from their control must represent the unpredictable realms of energy manifestation dominated by the unqualified absolute. If they exert an influence upon the primordial forces of this absolute, we are not cognizant of such functions, though there is some slight evidence which would warrant the opinion that certain of the physical controllers are sometimes automatically reactive to certain impulses of the universal absolute.
Okay, now here's where, if you're thinking total deity, you go, wait a minute. This all sounds a little bit too animated for reservoirs of potential. Certain impulses. Obviously, what we're really wanting you to think about is, besides just the fact of, from an individuality viewpoint, you have these presences of these reservoirs of potential, like the unqualified absolute. Flip them around. So the unqualified absolute is the infinite capacity. The universal absolute is the infinite upholder. Okay, what they're really pointing out is when you get to those three living energies, it's less and less valid to be thinking of this in this kind of bottom-up point of view from an individuality viewpoint where you have the seven absolutes of infinity. You need to start thinking more in deity terms. Where the as a facet of deity functioning, the infinite upholder has a certain expression, certain impulses, you know, of that infinite polar, you know, so that it is, it's controlling things, but not directly. It's doing it through the power beings. Okay. So some of, you know, they're pointing out that even though they, from a kind of a bottom-up point of view, may not do a lot of micromanaging, especially of, you know, one of those three living energies, it still gets managed some through them by the infinite upholder. And again, you can understand that deity perspective more when you unpack the central universe, you know, bringing deity into the picture. You know, you can see exactly how the infinite upholder comes into play with those living energies and stuff like that. Okay, but you know, this is another one of those examples where initially they have to give you everything in the seven absolutes picture, and hopefully you're noticing their suggestions that a reservoir of the potential for mind energy doesn't seem like it has certain impulses. Right? It's just sitting there, okay, as a reservoir of potential. Right. Okay, and then you see the same thing in this last paragraph, too.
These living power mechanisms are not consciously related to the master universe energy over control of the unqualified absolute. But we surmise that their entire and almost perfect scheme of power direction is in some unknown manner subordinated to this supergravity presence. In any local energy situation, the centers and controllers exert near supremacy. They are always conscious of the super energy presence and the unrecognizable performance of the unqualified absolute.
Again, you know, it was a little vague in the previous paragraph about the unqualified absolute. It started, you know, and they're talking about over control of the unqualified absolute, but by the time you get to the end, the unrecognizable performance, okay, the reservoir of potential for material energy doesn't perform, okay? The infinite capacity functions, okay? That, you know, see, they're reminding you that, you know, that in the same way that you think of the unqualified absolute as coming into relationship with the Isle of Paradise, you know, like when you talk about Nether Paradise, you flip that around to the other vantage point, and you're talking about the infinite upholder coming into relationship with the infinite capacity. You know, and, you know, you can see that in the infinite eternal ellipse, you know, that which extends the infinite capacity extended the infinite upholder from the sixth into the seventh level, and they come into relationship with each other. You know, that's the two things that we were talking about here. It's that deity relationship in the seventh functional level between the infinite upholder and the infinite capacity, and how that is tied to the relationship between the unqualified absolute and the Paradise Isle. There's, you know, it's all happening in this kind of secreted domains, you know, even from the vantage point of the revelators.
Where in the book do we find out about these 10 energies?
We're going to get more of it, you know, reading here. I mean, this is the main place in this paper. Yeah, you know, that you get the little clues about it. You know, you'll see him mentioning the living and dead energies here when we get into the master physical controllers, and yeah, this is the real primary place. I mean, obviously, you know, you got paper 42. You want to think about that, you know, in relationship to this. All right. Well, we went kind of over. We had that little detour that we had there when we were talking about the revelation, but that was a good thing to do. You know, to repeat that in context as many times as appropriate. You know, so that you start to really see, you know, what kind of a frame of mind you're supposed to have when you engage a revelation. You have to be in a different frame of mind than anyone is used to. You have to know what a revelation is. You know, otherwise you misinterpret everything that's in it. You won't get to the truth that's actually being revealed. All you're going to see is the facts that are disclosed, and you're going to misinterpret them all. And you're never going to get to the truth. So you have to get into proper relationship with the facts, and then you begin to be able to think the truth that's flowing through the revelation. And you can begin to put it together and, you know, and figure out a lot of these things like I've been talking about, how you can figure this stuff out. I mean, it's once you see the pattern, it's like it's not a guess. It can only be one thing, but, you know. Yeah, so, because you can see the whole picture and you can dismiss any other options. You know, it's not like you just believe the first thing you think of. You think of all the possible things and you dismiss all the ones, and then there's one left that you can't refute. That's because it's the truth. That's how you do this. But you got to get in that mode where you aren't subservient to some scientific authority and his goofy notions about, you know, I mean, you know, they think they know everything about a vast universe. I mean, you know, some of them haven't even been to another continent, for Pete's sake. You know, and they're telling you what's going on a 3 billion light years away in vast detail. Really? Yeah. I mean, just think about it. It's ridiculous. So take it with a grain of salt. All right. Let's take a moment here.